Welcome to the Gravitational Podcast. On today's episode, I am thrilled to be joined by Carrie Lynn Shaw. She is a fractional chief people officer who is revolutionizing salary negotiation and career growth. Welcome to Gravitational,
Kayle. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So glad that we were able to make this happen, and I'm excited for this conversation. Negotiating is one of my favorite skills, so I'm excited to be able to pull the curtain back a little bit and get into the nitty-gritty. So before we get too deep, I always like to hear the introduction directly from the talent themselves. Tell us a bit about your backstory and what we should know to better understand the person who's sitting here today.
Thank you. Well, I spent 2/3 of my career in sales and marketing and 1/3 in HR. I fell into HR by complete accident, didn't know how to spell it, was not in my trajectory. And what has been really interesting as I went through that journey and fast forward to why I started the salary bump, I watched a lot of people do it wrong when it comes to negotiation. And I watched myself do it wrong, actually, for much of my career. So in the early part of my career, I was super hungry. I sold cars to pay for college. I'm an automotive junkie, and I'm also, I ride a Harley and love that space. But it was a really interesting time because I was in sales, so I was always paid for my performance. And I didn't really think about the salary or the negotiation because I always thought, if I do good work, the money will come.
Right.
And to an extent it did, don't get me wrong. But I recognized that I am allowed to have growth and impact and learning and the things that I really truly value and the money. And it wasn't until I got into HR that I realized how much I had been leaving on the table. Mm. And part of that was now seeing all the salaries. And as a C-suite leader, I saw how grossly underpaid I was compared to all of the men sitting on the board table with me. And I decided I wanted to change that, A, for myself, which I did, and then B, for my clients with the salary bump. So this is a little bit of the origin story as to why I created it.
That's amazing. We connected relatively recently. So we were talking a little bit before we got started about how crazy this is that we were able to make this happen so quick. But you're a bit of an automotive junkie, are you?
I am.
Okay, tell me a bit. Do you have a collection?
I don't have a collection.
Okay.
I'm very passionate about German brands. I spent 12 years working for BMW.
Okay.
BMW still has my heart.
Yeah.
Very much so. My dream car is a 911, so I will be buying one of those in the near term. And Harley motorcycles has actually really become a new passion over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Did not ever think I would be a rider and have fell in love with it.
That's so interesting. As we continue talking more, it makes sense why the universe brought us together for sure. I joke all the time and say that the only way that I've been able to stay in the family is because of the promise I made to my dad to get him his 911. I knew how to say 911. That probably was my first phrase. I will have to go back and fact check that, but I wouldn't be surprised. So yeah, that's very funny. Have you gone on the website and like customized it and done
all
the things?
Well, I used to do some marketing for them. It
okay.
was one of my first jobs.
Okay.
And I got to go on the racetrack with
nice.
Both BMW and Porsche. And so fast driving is something that I'm really, really passionate about, being on the Autobahn. Of course, I lived in Germany as well.
Yeah.
So I actually got to see a changeover of a new model year and
okay.
do marketing around that. So
nice.
We got to go from the old car to the new car and
right.
really understand the nuances. And I was a bit of a product junkie, so I knew everything about work and all these random things that, I don't know, maybe not as many women knew about at that
right.
time. And I just thought, oh, it's just so interesting and so fun. And
yeah.
I love the space. And there's something about the sound of the engine. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, we could have done a whole separate episode just talking about cars. Tell us about your time abroad. How does that play into the story of KL? And what does that look like on your kind of career trajectory?
Interesting question. I had a really hard time in my expat. I didn't speak German when I got there, and I was running an HR project, and it was naively, I said yes to every opportunity my entire career, so I didn't even really do much research. I was like, hell yeah, I'm in, let's go. When I got there, my boss spoke German to me after 2 weeks and knew very well that I did not speak a single word of German. And I ended up coming home with a herniated disc, extreme migraines, and I just put myself in a really difficult position. Part of it was the pressure that he put me under, and most of it was the pressure I put myself under, because succeeding at every role I ever did was really important to me, and not failing was extremely important. And I had a really heavy project, and it was, do you want me to do this project and be successful, or do you want me to learn German? So I cannot do both. Right. Physically, mentally, emotionally, it's impossible. So I learned a lot about myself during that time. I was miserable and came out on the other end and was so proud of what I was able to accomplish. But in the end, I think I would have done a few things differently personally.
I'm curious, in hindsight, how do you feel that some of those failures contributed to what you'd later see as successes?
I hate the word failure. I would say I'm a grower, I'm a learner. Everything is about my growth journey. So when I look back on it, I think, wow, it put some hair on my chest. I learned so much about my own resilience and about what I should and shouldn't be saying no to, and boundaries that I should be setting for myself. And I think the biggest learning was he wanted me to fit in a box. I don't fit in any box. And I tried to put myself in the box that he wanted me to be in, so that I, you know, was making sure I did a good job, right? And that experience taught me so much to look back and say, no. I have to look in the mirror at the end of the day, and it's about my authentic self and what is my authentic self, and just being really true and defining that. I had to be able to look in the mirror. So it wasn't long that I was in this little box and I was like, this does not feel right. I have to find a way to get him what he needs, but do it my way. And I did feel a bit like the American cowboy. I think he thought that as well. But I was like, no, Kale, you've got to do this the way that it feels right for you. And in the end, it worked out, and I was really proud of what I accomplished and what I went through.
Yeah.
And what I would never go through again.
And it sounds like most of your journey, correct me if I'm wrong, but was spent in male-dominated fields, industries, almost like as male-dominated as you can get. How did that help shape how you show up, how you move?
Great questions. I loved being in male-dominated industries. First of all, in a sea of blue suits, I always stood out.
Yeah.
And I naturally always try to ask intelligent questions, do good work, show up, and be curious. And I rarely felt like, oh, I'm the only woman at the table. I generally was, but it never felt negative to me. I had phenomenal male supporters, mentors, and I had really generally great experiences. I had, you know, a couple of really crappy leaders, but I think we all get one or two in our career.
Right.
But for the most part, it fueled me in a very positive way. I don't think it was a negative. Where it got negative was when I started to see how grossly underpaid I was, partly my fault for not negotiating.
Right.
Partly the company's fault for not having good equity programs and diversity policies in place, because one of the things I'm very, very proud of as a chief people officer is that I always do an equity analysis. First thing I do when I take over a role, and I look at where we stand internally and fix any internal issues, and then also do external benchmarking, because that's, I think, where most companies are not doing that, but that's where you retain the best talent and you attract the best talent, when you have transparency around what you offer and what the market offers,
right?
So that you're not completely out of line. I'm sure people listening could have many examples of a recruiter calling or looking at jobs that are posted on the platforms where it's so ridiculously off, and those are budgeted numbers. Those are not market numbers.
Right.
So I teach my people to do their homework and make sure that they know what the value is on the market, so that they can have an intelligent conversation about that going in.
Yeah. It's interesting, because some of the points that you just outlined sound very familiar to that of the car buying process.
Oh.
So I'm curious where that crossover is and how you see that show up.
One thing that was always very frustrating to me in automotive was, I haven't read the latest statistic, but 70% of buying power on paper. And how many of the marketing initiatives are marketing to women? Almost none. No automotive manufacturer is finding me, and right. I have the money to spend.
Right.
So like no one's marketing to me. So it's like a big miss. And the car buying experience is like going to the dentist. It is not a fun experience. It is not a streamlined experience. And you know, you hear enough horror stories where women walk in with their partner and they're the ones buying the car and they talk to the partner. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to make this a better process. Same with the service process and creating an environment that women actually feel welcome.
Right.
And it's a warm place to come in. You see more and more women selling cars. And actually there's a phenomenal woman, the Car Mom. I don't know if you follow her.
No.
Okay. She is flipping the car industry on its head for women and for moms.
Yeah.
And her dad actually is owns a BMW dealership. So I knew of her father, but he has many different franchises. And so she is, I think, has over 500,000 followers. And she is completely transforming this industry and educating women so that they know what they should be looking for and using her as a resource. And also from a safety perspective, you know, when you're putting car seats in, you have to have a little bit of a different view.
100%. You mentioned negotiation and how that plays a part in everything, really. Let's start there, because looking at your perspective in terms of negotiating, that obviously is one specific view. But I think that negotiation as a whole is something that's really only immediately thought of in salary conversations, yeah, or when you're talking about a deal or a sponsorship. It's not always registered that you negotiate every day, multiple times a day. So tell us more about negotiating and your background and the work that you do with the salary bump.
I mean, I grew up in sales. I spent a lot of my time in sales, and that in itself is a constant negotiation. I'm a mom. That in itself is a constant negotiation, right? Are you going to eat your veggies? Aren't you going to eat your veggies? You're constantly negotiating, as is my child, who is now 21, but she pushed the limits and pushed the boundaries. And without knowing, she was learning how to negotiate.
Right.
So it's a natural thing. And I think the part that I find most intriguing about it is that there's a negative connotation around negotiation, which is what I'm trying to change. The moment you hear negotiation, you think that we're going into battle.
Right.
You think lawyer, you think very difficult conversations. And it does not have to be that way. The best negotiations are the ones that have a win-win approach at the beginning. And it's what I teach my people, but it's everything in life. Negotiating, where are we going for dinner after this? I really want Mexican. You really want Indian. Well, you know what? Let's figure out who wins this one, right? Like, right. You know what? Tell me what you're feeling about Indian tonight. Why are you feeling tacos, Kale? Because you know what? Guacamole, I dreamt about it. Like, you know what? Then let's go for guac, because you clearly have that as your big passion today. It's constant, and it just doesn't have to be a war. Especially, I think that the negotiation, when you start talking about it around salaries, is money is a funky subject, and there's a lot of limiting beliefs around money. So when you think about money doesn't grow on trees, you think about filthy rich, you think these connotations that are very negative. And so there's a greed that is an element that comes up for people. And when you're applying for a job, you're so excited about landing the job. Maybe you don't have one, so you're especially intrigued that I need to pay my bills.
Right.
Or you're interviewing with your dream company. There's this, I just want to say yes. I don't care what they offer me. And that's okay. I understand where that's coming from, but you're allowed to have both a job that you desire, things that you value, and the money to go along with it. And the one key thing that I think a lot of people just don't recognize is that person making you the offer is expecting you to negotiate. So the door is literally wide open, and the amount of people that don't walk through it, it's an incredibly low statistic. The stats are less than 50% of people negotiate, less than 34% of women negotiate, and that number is even lower for people of color. And it just has to change, and it doesn't have to be a gross conversation. It can be a beautiful conversation. I want you, want me, let's rock and roll. Okay, let's find a way. Here's what the market's paying. Let's talk about that.
And what are you seeing based on your time in the HR space? What does that tend to tell you about the candidate, whether they're willing to negotiate or not?
So if you don't negotiate, you're missing a big opportunity to show your leadership and your confidence. So when someone negotiates with me, unless they're being rude, which, you know, very rarely happens. And by the way, of the thousands of offers I've given in my career, I've never once pulled an offer because someone negotiated. And that's a fear that a lot of people have.
Right.
Some people just don't even know they can negotiate. I think the idea of walking through a door and knowing that the person on the other end is gracious. If somebody negotiates with me, I look at you as a leader. I look at you like, all right, I want her on my team. Because if this is the way she advocates for herself, this is the way she's going to advocate for our company. And it's seen as a very positive thing. Again, it's how you do it like anything. If you come in guns a-blazing, well, you probably aren't going to have the same success rate. But if you do it in a win-win style and you make it about the value that you're bringing and the market, not about the fact that I need to pay my bills. They don't care about that. They care about what you're going to bring to the company. If you do it in that way, it's a win. It's beautiful.
And what do you see generally in terms of the differences in approach between the guys and the girls?
Unfortunately, the numbers are still really low for men as well. So I think generally men and women value different things. So women might value more flexibility, where we work, time off, depending on where they are in their life. So women might have different values. Men tend to negotiate a little bit more than women, but women will say, I'm okay with that salary as long as I have the time off or as long as I have the flexibility to work from anywhere. I don't need more because this is actually more valuable to me.
Right.
So I think it's more of women just need to know that you're allowed to have both. I'm trying to change.
So you mentioned something when we were talking earlier about what I heard as some creative solutions. So when you're entering into a salary negotiation and maybe the company in reality does not have the budget for the number you were looking for, what are some of the other options that we have?
The very first thing that I recommend everyone do is their homework. Mm. Like anything, you have to be prepared. Prepared to walk into that job interview. Your elevator pitch better be on point. You better have done your homework on the company. All of that, you're not walking into an interview completely naked, right? So highly, highly important that you prepare. And part of that preparation is in looking for what is the value of the role that I'm looking for, the title, the location, what city, state, right? So you can go down that low. I would suggest you do it on a bunch of different websites so that you can formulate what is the range. And then you say, okay, today I make 150. This is a senior director role. It's a promotion. I'm going for 200. The market is showing 160 to 225. I feel like 200 is a perfect place for me. That's what I'm going for. So then when you go and you talk numbers with this company, you talk in ranges and you never give a number. Mm. A lot of people make the mistake when they ask, what are your salary expectations? They say, oh, well, I currently make 150. Biggest mistake you could ever make. Second biggest mistake. First is not asking. Second is answering it that way. So always having that range in mind and knowing if your magic number where you would be like so thrilled with is 200, you start your range around 190 to 240. Mm. And if you end up on the lower end, you're still really, really happy with where you're going to be. Besides salary, let's say they come back and say, you know what, the best we can do is 175. You're like, all right. Still a $25,000 increase. Let's talk a little bit more about all the other levers we have to pull. We have bonus. We have sign-on bonus. We have performance bonus. We have spot bonus. We have development. Mm. We have investment in your career, MBA, grad school. We have transportation, cars, gas, in some cases airplanes, depending on the level that you know we're negotiating with. In all of my years, not one person, not one, ever asked me about the healthcare costs and the breakdown of healthcare and what's included. And there is a vast difference between the different levels of healthcare. Some have really crappy benefits that don't include anything that you're looking for. And the costs are extreme. So you could give up your whole salary bump and have it all go to healthcare if you're not careful. So asking all these questions of all the levers you have to pull. So in my program, I have a worksheet that basically lists out all the levers you have to pull. And then you list your current numbers, and then you list what the offer is, and then you have a conversation. You say, look, 175 based on the market value is lower than the market value. I'd really like to get closer to the 200 mark as discussed, and stop talking and see if there's any more room for play. And if the answer is no, it's like, okay, I really want to work here. You really want me, you know, let's see how we can make this work. Let's talk about all the other benefits. You could do a sign-on bonus that is of significant value that could make up a couple of years of that $25,000 miss, right? So you could make up the bonus that you're leaving on the table from your current company. You can throw in all the other things, and the line items for all of those things fall in a different bucket on the P&L. So when they're looking at the most expensive line item is the talent.
Right.
These other ancillary things are easier for them to negotiate because they're looking at benchmarking and such. So there is a ton of room in all these other benefits for you to put on the table. And don't be shy to have that conversation.
As someone who is maybe fresh out of school and looking for their first position, that in and of itself is scary.
Yeah.
But then thinking about negotiating on top of that is even scarier. So what would some of your pointers be for somebody who's potentially entering their first salary negotiation?
It's not much different than I just described. It's doing your homework. And I think the key, if it's your first opportunity, is like getting your elevator pitch spot on. Because that's also showing your value,
right?
It's showing your confidence. It's showing that you are coming very well prepared. And then if you present it like, I've done my homework on the market value for a role at this level, and this is the range that I've found. And so when you don't talk pure numbers and you talk range, there's always some play and flexibility. You can also talk sign-on bonus. Maybe you're relocating. You can talk about relocation. And I'd also say, if I were fresh, it's my first job, I would talk to them about, tell me about my growth trajectory here. Let's talk about my career here. Let's talk about my development. And that will include my financial development. I want to know what a career looks like here, and that you're investing in a company that is investing in you. And then build your network, foster that network, and really expand yourself throughout the organization and say yes to every opportunity. And the money will definitely come. It may not be your dream salary from day one, but you also do need to get your foot in the door. So I don't know if I would be quite as aggressive as a fresh out of college, but I would look at all the other levers. And I think a sign-on bonus is a beautiful one. So you've got student loans to pay, and you know, you've also, you know, moving into a city, and who knows, getting your first place. Like, these are things that you want to make sure you're covering.
Right, for sure. What are some things that you would say off the bat that you want to have down in your elevator pitch?
Well, I just did it actually with my daughter. I do it with a lot of clients, but hers is very fresh as of just a few days ago. Three questions that I like for people to ask. One, what do you love? Two, what are you really good at? And three, how are you making an impact on the world? Her answer was she loves travel and she loves cultural diversity. Her story is that when she was 8 years old, we moved to Germany. She was the only kid in the neighborhood that didn't speak German, and she became fluent within a couple of months. Was at an international school, and some of the kids in the school were German. They limit the percentage that are allowed because they want more international students. And she actually would translate from the English-speaking teacher to the German kids so that they could follow. And everything there was team-based.
Okay.
So in second and third grade, they were doing all these just incredible things. And it sort of taught her how to be cognizant and thoughtful about the person sitting in the corner of the room that isn't included or isn't involved or isn't following, whether or not they speak that mother tongue, or just to kind of bring people along and think about inclusivity. So it's been a very natural thing for her. But we moved her to 6 different schools before she graduated high school. And as much as she hated that, her elevator pitch was around, I grew up in an international family. And while at the time it was incredibly stressful having to always be the new kid and not speaking the language and having to go and integrate every time, what it taught me was cultural sensitivity and inclusivity. And it has benefited me greatly today as I move into the next phase of my career. So talking about sort of where she's come from, and it's okay to bring something personal if you can tie it and connect it. And she loves to travel and she loves language. And so we brought that in. And I think, you know, just thinking about what you're good at and how you're making an impact. The goal really with an elevator pitch is how can you connect really fast with your audience? So I talk about being an automotive nerd. I talk about falling into HR by accident and how it was the best accident that could have ever happened. Also, I carry 3 passports. So does my daughter. And so these are things that I bring in so that I can connect well with the person on the other end, which think about DEI as a chief people officer. These are important things that the person on the other end wants to hear. So short, simple, and focusing on connecting with the other person and my advice.
I think that's a fantastic segue. I'm always intrigued by how different people approach establishing rapport. And as a chief people officer, I'm sure that that is a large component of your work. How do you personally approach that? And then what are some creative ways that you've seen it done?
I would say the number one thing, and this is very much, I'm an energy leadership coach. It's all about energy. And I'm a very big energy reader. Mm. So I can tell when someone is bringing energy or not into that first interaction. And whether or not they're in my zone and they want to connect with me. So I think it's reading the audience, bringing your highest level of energy, especially when you're walking into an interview, extremely important. A meditator, I would always meditate first, get myself in the zone. So from an interview perspective, it's about bringing high energy and about being prepared. But generally, I think curiosity is probably the biggest avenue for you to connect with people. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about you. I love your shirt. I love your top. I read on your LinkedIn that you do XYZ. I'm so intrigued by that. Tell me more. I think that's a way that I would recommend for people.
Yeah. It's always intriguing seeing the different perspectives, the different methods. And to your point about energy, I think that is something that maybe needs to be focused a bit more on. Because I have always, as funny as it sounds, I've always been hypersensitive to that because I grew up with dogs. And so dogs can always tell. My grandmother is very afraid of dogs. And we always used to tell her, you can't bring that in because you don't need to be afraid of him, but he can tell that you're afraid of him. And so it's very interesting looking at that and understanding that your energy is felt when you go into a room. No matter how crowded the room is, there is somebody in that room who will feel the shift. What type of shift is that? Yeah. And how do you position yourself to make sure that you're projecting what you truly feel inside, as opposed to maybe the lens that your insecurities are trying to project through?
That's so interesting because I think confidence is such a big factor and not everybody has it. And it's a muscle that you have to build. It's one worthy of building, whether you find a coach, mentor, or you do the work on your own, it is so worth it. And people have a lot of limiting beliefs, and not everybody is as social, not everybody is a connector. My best piece of advice is grounding yourself to when you have walked into a room and it felt really good, what was going on for you, what was the room, and to try to ground yourself back to that. Like, okay, well, I've done this before. I've successfully had an interview. I've successfully ran a marathon, I've successfully lost 50 pounds, I have done something that I can sort of figure out what were the steps that I took to get there to help build your confidence, as opposed to, oh, I have to walk into this room and it's so stressful, or I have to go into this interview and I don't, feel prepared. I think there's always something we can ground ourselves to that we did really well.
So shifting your focus or shifting your perspective on the difficult thing in the moment is something that you'd say is really key.
Mindset shift.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Because you can go down a rabbit hole and you can be incredibly stressed over a situation and you get yourself all wound up, and that's not helpful, right? Yeah. If it's not something you're comfortable with, you have to find a way to get comfortable that's authentic for you, right? So what is that? You walk into a room and you light it up. Others might be, I'm not a connector, I'm not that social, but you know what? I could probably find at least one person that I can connect with. What is it that I would be looking for that I would want to connect with that person? Oh, I want to read their energy. I want to see someone who's smiling. I want to see someone who's drinking the same drink as I am. I want to see someone who, whatever. There's always a way for you to break it down into something bite-sized so that you can not get so overwhelmed. But mindset shift is, it's hard. I'm not saying that it's so easy. I'm making it sound really easy. It's
right.
Not. It's not for some people.
How would you say your approach has changed as you've matured in your career?
I don't know if it has that much. I've always been incredibly curious. I have always been someone who said yes to every opportunity, and I'm not afraid to make mistakes. And that, I think, from very early days, I'm really grateful for. I did not get hammered if I did make a mistake. I always was very fortunate in most environments to be in an environment where I could be free to do that, excluding my Germany experience. The idea for me of learning from everything that I did, whether it was a success or pseudo failure, that's how you learn and you grow. So yeah, I said yes to every opportunity, and I still am. I launched a company last year. I had no idea what that would look like. That was never in my thought process. And because of my curiosity, and I'm a learner, that's why it's worked for me. But there's been hard moments. And I think I have a beautiful network around me, and I have a toolbox to pull from when things are tough or when I'm down. And I feel very fortunate to have built that toolbox. I worked really hard to build it, so it wasn't really just given to me, but I also believe we're right where we're supposed to be. And there's a reason for everything, including one thing in my life. Everything else, I have been able to sort of connect the dots. And I think to just appreciate the moments that you're in.
I love that perspective, and that's something that I am actively working on, have been for some years now, but adding those tools to the toolbox and sharpening them as much as possible is extremely valuable, for sure.
One piece of advice that I have been given and share a lot is being also very conscious about who you're inviting to your table. So who's sitting at your table? Are these people that are lifting you up, encouraging you, challenging you, having beautiful conversations, enriching conversations, being really thoughtful about the people that you let into your life and let into your energy, and to really trust your instincts, your gut when something doesn't feel right, to really question that and to be brave to push it away if it's not right. It's something I talked a lot to my daughter about. She's just so intuitive, and she didn't even need that coaching, so she has it naturally, but for some it takes a little bit longer, and it's a bit harder for us to push away the things that just don't feel right. But yeah, be careful who's sitting at your table.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I think that idea of whether it's pushing away or not being afraid to walk away from the table, the deal, the job offer, that's something that shows up consistently. What are some pieces of advice that you'd give for those that are a bit more apprehensive, or maybe coming from a much more limiting belief of there isn't another XYZ, so it's gotta be this or nothing?
Well, we all know logically that that's not true. That's not a true statement, right? There are millions of people, there are millions. We're sitting here in New York City with millions of job opportunities. It depends, I think, on your bravery, right? So if you are, do you have good plans and, you know, a good financial plan in place that is secure for 6 months to a year if you were to exit your job, which, by the way, everyone should have as part of their planning. for a million reasons because there's no safety anymore. Companies are hiring and firing like nothing today. You should always have that backup plan. But, you know, what's your comfort level in saying, I feel like I'm going to take this risk and I'm okay if, you know, if it doesn't happen tomorrow. But if you're not okay with that, then build your side hustle on the side until it gets to a level where you can quit your job or actively look for a new job while you still have your current one and start to really hone in on what you really value, what's really important to you. And if you're not happy in your current role, okay, well, what do I want differently in my next role? And I'm going to be consequent. Then I'm going to find that and start going after it. So it's a question of what steps you take based on your comfort level.
Right. How would you navigate maybe identifying that your comfort zone needs to expand, but not being quite sure how to make that happen?
Well, I mean, again, it comes down to curiosity. I think you have got to start to ask yourself the hard questions. Mm. And if I can identify what it is that I value, what I really care about, and then I ask myself, am I living that? And am I in a place where those are being honored? And if not, what do I want to do about it? Because no one's going to care more about you than you.
Right.
And you are the one who is in charge of your life. Same thing in your career. You have to get in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
No one else is driving this for you. So again, I think it comes down to surrounding yourself with really amazing people, finding mentors, finding people that you can talk to. If you can hire a coach, I would say it's one of the best investments that you can give yourself to just really start to evaluate, what do I want? Not what my parents want, not what my friends want for me or what people think I want. I think a lot of people just don't ask themselves those questions. Mm. And the sooner you do that, the sooner the world opens up. You know, I just think it's this plethora of opportunity and connection with people. You don't know how one conversation could totally change your life.
Yeah.
It has in every case for me. I don't think I've ever applied for a job. It's always been a conversation, a connection, a dinner party, a cocktail party, an event. Like, oh, I really like how you show up and you should come work for us. Really? Where do you work? Oh, okay. Sounds great. I'm in. Let's, you know, send you my resume. So just always putting yourself out there and finding ways to connect with people, I think, is good advice.
Yeah. I love that connection. I think we're seeing that even more now and that message being shared more, that connection is really at the root of everything at some level.
Yeah.
So I love that focus for sure. I am sure that we could sit here talking for another couple hours. We haven't even dove much deeper on the Autobahn, and that needs to happen.
Yes.
But I think we are getting to the end of our time.
Love it.
We may need to save that for part two.
Sounds great.
But I am so grateful for you, for your time, for having this conversation. There are some valuable nuggets. There were, at least for me. So I'm hoping that there are for whoever's listening. But thank you so much. Before you leave us, where can everybody find you? How can they work with you?
Love it. So The Salary Bump everywhere, from Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. I am also Carrie Lynn Shaw. You put it in the show notes.
Yep.
On LinkedIn, and I offer a lot of great nuggets on LinkedIn. I post 5 days a week, so a lot of freebies. And yeah, my website is The Salary Bump.
Amazing.
And I'm excited about bringing this to your audience and how I can support.
Yes. Thank you so much for taking the time. You've got to be back. We need a part two all about car girl stuff.
We do. Maybe I'll get you to ride a motorcycle.
Exactly. We'll see. It's not far off.